Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today, my friends, we're going to hit the mailbag. And the first one out of the bag is an email that someone sent me with an article attached to it from the, looks like it says Real Estate Wall Street Journal, I think is what it's from. And interesting article. The headline is, Wall Street has spent billions buying homes. A crackdown is looming. Subtitle, lawmakers say investors that scooped up hundreds of thousands of houses to rent out are driving up home prices. Article starts by stating Wall Street went on a home buying spree. Now more lawmakers want to stop it from ever happening again. Democrats in the U.S. Senate and House have sponsored legislation that would force large owners of single-family homes to sell houses to family buyers. A Republican bill in the Ohio state legislature aims to drive out institutional owners through heavy taxation. Lawmakers in Nebraska, California, New York, Minnesota, and North Carolina are among those proposing similar laws. While homeowner associations for years have sought to stop investors from buying and renting out homes in their neighborhoods, the legislative proposal represents a new effort to elect officials by elected officials to regulate Wall Street's appetite for single-family homes. These lawmakers say that investors that have scooped up hundreds of thousands of homes, and I emphasize that verbiage, hundreds of thousands of homes. Oh, see, it went to the next page and skipped to something weird. Something buyers to compete with Wall Street-backed investment firms because of their all-cash offers. So in other words, it makes it very difficult for a beginner homeowner to go buy a house. And by the way, these Wall Street purchasers are not buying expensive homes. They're buying the low-end homes, the rental-type properties that are out there. It goes on and says, investors of all sizes spent billions of dollars buying homes during the pandemic. At the 2022 peak, they bought more than one in every four single-family homes. In other words, one of every four is one quarter of all of them that were sold. Though more recently, their activity has slowed as interest rates rose and the supply became tighter. Two of the largest home buying firms, institutions, Homes AMH, are publicly traded companies, while a number of other companies backed by private equity hold portfolios of tens of thousands of homes. All right, so should we be worried about this as investors, or is this a good thing? Well, you have to parse it out. The most important thing to understand, and they've got a chart here that's wonderful, is that if you look at the number of homes that are owned by big companies, less than 6% of all rental properties are owned by large companies, by these institutional firms. So they have this chart here and it says, okay, businesses that own 1,000 plus homes, and they show it on a graph, and it's non-existent. It's non-existent in 2024. In 2023, it was existent, but in 2024, it looks like they divested most of those properties. It goes on to companies that own 100 to 999 properties. There's quite a few of those, but that's what's making up 5% of this 6% number. And then it drops all the way down to people that own 1 through 9 units. So if 6% are held by these large firms, 94% of all single-family rent houses are owned by mom-and-pop investors that own between 1 and 9 units. So this article goes on, and without frying your mind with me just reading an article, which is improper radio technique, I believe. I'm just going to tell you what it basically says. It says that they want to outlaw in some of these organizations, some of these legal entities, these municipalities, states, national, whatever it is, are saying they want to outlaw companies that own over 50 houses. The most aggressive of all of these says they want to outlaw 20 or more houses. Well, I would suggest to you that if you own more than 20 houses, and I've owned up to 100, over 100 houses. I think 106 was my peak one day. But like 100 houses I've owned. And the deal is that when I own them, I saw very quickly that I need to go buy apartments. Because you can buy one apartment, own 100 units all in one place. And that's a small apartment. So why wouldn't anybody want to own more than 100 houses? Well, these guys saw that these houses were the future because they were assets. And the theory was the assets will go up in value. In other words, they're not really even living for the rental income. They're really living for the large capital gains that comes out of buying a house like we did. And we do, you know, we buy a house for $100,000 that's worth $200,000. We put $50,000 in it and totally renovate it and make it perfect. And now it's worth $200,000. If we sell it back to the open market, we make $50,000. Buying this property, we probably have to put anywhere from $10,000 to $25,000 down. And the reason we get in for so cheap is because we use hard money lenders, which is basically paying cash with somebody else's money. They lend us the money to buy it and to renovate it. Then we refinance them out, pay them 15% interest while we use their money and go on down the road, which is negligible because the money's only in there a month or two at the most. So here we are, we're making, you know, putting in $10,000 to $25,000 and we're making $50,000. So that's anywhere from a 200%, let's see, if we make 10,000, put 10 in and make 50, that's a 500% return, right? And if we put 25 in and we make 50, that's a 100% return. So, you know, the bottom line is this is incredible, right? 50. I'm sorry, if we put in 25, 50, yeah, that's 50% return. So we're making, you know, anywhere from 50 to 200, 300% return on these things, incredible rates of return. But we're not buying 1,000 of them. What these guys did was they went out and raised funds, capital, and they bought and paid cash for them. So when they paid for them, they were able to buy them for that $100,000. But they didn't buy one of them. They went out and bought 100 of them in a location, in an area, in a city. Did them all at the same time, got them all renovated, rented them all out, right? And made it a big business. What they essentially have done is took a small mom-and-pop business, which is the rental, single-family rental business, and turned it into a big, giant business. Let's equate that with the small mom-and-pop grocery store who got run out of town by Walmart. Same difference, same kind of deal, except this. Walmart put people out of business. And even these guys buying 1,000 houses didn't put any of us landlords out of business. We still owned our rent houses. Our rent houses still rented. Why? Because they are only 6% of this market. We are 94% of this market, and we're spread out all over the country. Moving on to the next email. I got a question, came in and said, just finished watching Dell interrupt a case study and completely blow our minds. We have a question now. Please provide your professional opinion on realistically how many properties we can acquire in 12-month period. Amy and I just wanted to have a goal to set our eyes on. Thanks. So I think the one they saw was probably me going in there saying, do you see how incredible these deals are that are happening? I mean, these single-family deals that I'm telling you about, just like the one I told you about in the last segment, where they're making over 100% return, 50 to 100, 200% returns, they're incredible. And yet, so the people are sitting here going, well, if these deals are that great, then is there any of them out there, and how many can you get? And so the question was, you know, what do we expect that we can get now that we're members here? And I wrote back and I said, it depends on you. And having us, are you having us help you find them, or are you going to do it on your own? Now, that's not a sales pitch so much, it's a reality. We've been doing this for 35 years. We have real estate agents and mentors that are all over this stuff. The good old boy system in real estate is out there. And these deals come to us and we give them to our members. That's the way this whole thing was set up. It became clear to me very quickly that I can find these deals very easily. Other people that are, you know, sharp and listen to what I say and follow what I teach them to do can find these deals. But some people, they just don't have those skill sets. And if they want to be able to do this, they've got to find these deals. So I said, I've got to start some real estate companies and set up some real estate companies to find them. I've set up some mentors to walk people through these deals, et cetera, et cetera. So it depended on whether you're going to use us or not. And they wrote back promptly and said, yes, we've joined up for the consulting and we'll be operating under the we will do what Dell tells us to do belief. So now what's your professional opinion? So in other words, okay, you're going to work with our people and you're willing to do what we tell you to do. My next answer back was one every month seems realistic. So Dell, you can buy a house every month. Yeah. One of the things that most people don't understand, I would say 99% of the people don't understand this when you come in, is that when you bought your first personal residence, you had to qualify with a debt-to-income ratio. And if you had too much debt and not enough income, they would tell you you could only buy a little bitty house or no house at all. If you had, you know, better situation, you could buy a larger house, right? Thinking that, okay, they told me I can buy a $200,000 house. Well, if you buy a $200,000 house, you've used up your debt-to-income ratio and that's it. You're done. But that doesn't work that way with rental properties, because with a rental property, you're buying not only the house, but you're buying the income that goes with it. So now that income extends your income on your debt to income ratio. So if the house is purchased with the correct debt to income ratio, it doesn't change your debt to income ratio at all. In fact, it might even make it better, right? And so you can re-qualify over and over again. Every time you buy a house, you have to get it done, finish it, get it rented, and move on to the next house. Now, in some cases, if you have enough debt-to-income ratio, you don't even have to do that because they will qualify your rent house, the amount of income, as whatever the average rental income is in that neighborhood. So let's say I buy a good deal. 3 weeks later, we've just about got the rehab done, but we haven't put the tenant in yet. And I find another one I want to buy. Well, I wouldn't qualify until I get this income coming in for this other house. Not the way it works. And I'm surprised at this myself, but the way it works is they will give you whatever the average rental income is in that neighborhood credit. Now, it changes once you put a tenant in there. So let's say they give you an average rental income of $1,200 and you rent it to somebody for $1,000. Well, you've just butchered your debt to income ratio because now you have less income than what they expected you to have. And so the next deal won't work. You've got to rent the property for whatever the correct rental amount is. And while I was answering back, and the rest of that sentence goes on, you need to look, then find, then contract, then go into feasibility, then close, then do the rehab, and then rent it out. Rinse and repeat. But I'm going to send this on to Isaac to see what he has to say. Now, Isaac is my national single family mentor. He's in charge of all the national single family mentors. And Isaac started by living in Miami and buying houses in Texas, Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, and so forth. He got so good at it. I heard him. I said, man, you got to teach other people how you're doing this because you're living over there and you're buying all this stuff over here. I want you out there to help. So he became the national mentor or the actual really lead mentor for all the national single family mentors. And here's what he wrote, which was rather interesting. Let's see if we can get it all in real quick before the end of the segment. He says, there are members that are buying 6, 8, 10 properties or more in 1 year, many in package deals. I spoke with a member this week that bought 5 fourplexes in Kansas City last year. You will run out of money before you run out of deals. For you guys, based on the initial meeting and conversation you have had, I am not concerned with you guys pulling the trigger. Let's work on getting you guys into your first deal and doing it right. When your education and your hard work meets experience getting into these deals, you'll learn your learning curve will take a fast and sharp turn, and you can ride that wave to as many deals as you desire. Rinse and repeat. Staying focused on your investment strategy that we spoke about will be key throughout this process. You want to see the big picture? Then start putting one foot in front of the other. For you guys, that's realistic. what's realistic will depend on when you pick the market and you want to invest in. Start building your team and start evaluating deals. Unless there's update, you guys are still working on determine if you want to invest in Pittsburgh or remotely. Say to others today, respond and immediately start. All right, we'll take another short break. We'll be right back with the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Walmsley Radio Show returns in moments.
How would a few hundred dollars of passive income monthly change your life? Cover a car payment, a living expense, add a few more streams, and when all your expenses are covered, you're retired. What if you could do so in 5 years or less? Lifestyles Unlimited can show you how by investing in real estate, just like Lifestyles Unlimited member Lisa.
So we started passively. It was on vacation is when we realized we really need to take the plunge and be more active in this. Just because I'm an educator, I wanted to really know what I was doing. So it was just education on my part is really big and knowledge. And I'm like, well, I could do that.
Learn how. Learn now with Lifestyles Unlimited. Go to GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. Enter code 2024 for our special offer, a two-year financial freedom membership for just $297. That's 66% off the regular price. GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. Code 2024. Take action today and get educated with Lifestyles Unlimited at GiveMeTotalFreedom.com.
You're hearing the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at LifestylesUnlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. Today we're going through the mailbag and got another email that came in. Question that's really good. It's got a couple layers and we'll try to get through it. Lady writes, hi Del, I'm 67 years old. I own 30 properties. Most are free and clear. I have 10 small loans which are low interest. I'm not really interested in buying more, but need to do something to lessen the tax. I have 8 properties that are just about depreciated out. The remaining properties are fairly new. Should I just take out some more loans and write off the interest or 1031 and buy another property, more properties, which would be more work for me? Thank you, Cheryl. Cheryl, realize that we're both about the same age. And so I understand being at that point where you've made it, you've got 30 properties, that's probably really good income to you. For the people out there who don't understand, though, what Cheryl's talking about is that the reason we don't pay taxes on our real estate income, which is really beneficial, you think about it, if you earn $100,000, you're paying 30% income tax, 15% Social Security Medicare tax, that's 45%. If you live in a state like California and New York, you're paying another 10% state tax, which is 57%. We're paying none of that, right? Because our real estate investments are passive and there's depreciation covering the income, so we don't have any income tax on them, right? So in this situation, you look at this stuff, after 30 years, or well, single family residential house gets depreciated over 27 and a half years. So if you've owned these things for a long, long time, two things have occurred. One, the mortgage is paid off, and two, the depreciation has been lost. So that means now with no mortgage, you're making a lot more cash flow, liquid cash flow slash income, because there's no interest to write off against it. And you don't have any depreciation to take. Double whammy. And all of a sudden, your taxes are just like everybody else's. You're paying 30% income tax, and you're paying whatever the state income tax is. And it's a burden. It really is, from having a great tax-free income position to not. So what should Cheryl do? There's two things and maybe three things I would do, Cheryl, to help you in this situation. Number one, where if the homes are new and they don't have enough debt on them, I put more debt on them. But if you're saying these homes are very old and they've used up their depreciation schedule, even putting more debt on them won't help because there will be no depreciation. Even with the debt bringing down the income, which would help some degree, it would not help with the depreciation if the depreciation is gone, if you've owned these homes for that long. So here's what I recommend doing. Number one, I would sell the houses that are old, that have no depreciation left, because you can't keep earning tax-free income without depreciation. But however, step number two is I might consider selling them to my family, because think about this. You've already got tenants in them. You already know where they're at. You've managed them for years. You know everything about them. Sell them to your kids. Sell them to your kids and do a 1031 exchange. If you were with us, we'd easily set that up for you where we'd find you the properties you need to buy, and we would have somebody to buy your properties that would wait to buy them. But if you got kids, your kids would be willing to wait, get them all lined up with the loans and everything, ready to go, and then come to us. We'll help you find some more if you don't know how to do it. If you already got 30, you probably know how to do it. Go find yourself some more properties and then sell. When you get ready to buy one, sell the other to your kids and do a 1031 exchange, which means all the capital gains you've made over this last 30 years, which is hundreds of thousands of dollars, you're going to get tax-free. Roll it forward, put it in properties that now have brand new depreciation schedules, probably newer homes, easier to manage, right? And let your kids start building the wealth. I think that's the way to go. Now, I would buy new ones, right, and get rid of the old ones. And if there's any that are already new that just needs more debt, then I'd just put more debt on them if that's all it was going to take. So you've got a double-edged sword you're working with here, and both of those things are going to be the right thing to do, to move this money around. Let's see what else we said here. First, I asked what type of properties they were. She said single family, and said for these properties to depreciate out, you have to have owned them for a long time, like 27 years. Then she came back and said, yeah, these things are over, you know, long enough there that there's no depreciable schedule left, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So here's one of those things that, hey, I know that you get to be my age, you know, you think, well, I made it. I'm financially successful. I don't want to do anything else. Well, I keep doing stuff, guys. I keep buying something new, at least one or two properties a year. I've bought one already this year. I've got one that's in contract, going to close very soon. And then I have two more that are going to close by May or June. So that'll be four properties for me for the year. And that's probably about all I'll do this year, unless something just wonderful falls in my lap, and then I'll do that too. You know, that's the beauty of being where this lady is and where I'm at, is that once you've got your portfolio together, you just sit back and wait for something to fall into your lap, and then boom, take it on and run with it, right? That's the beauty of it. So the last one here, let's see if we got a short one. I don't know. We'll see if we can get this. We only got a minute and a half left. It's not going to be enough to do another question. Just think about it this way, guys. This is a lifelong pursuit. You manage your portfolio. When you start, you do it as concisely and perfectly as you can. As you get better, as Isaac said, you build momentum. You'll move quicker and quicker and quicker. And you'll run out of money before you run out of deals that can be had. When you run out of money, then you wait. Build up your income again and try to pick up a property or two every year to keep doing that for the rest of your life so that your wealth grows every year. And so you have fresh depreciation meat every year. You've got fresh properties you can depreciate. And when you get some that don't have any depreciation left, you get rid of those. Move them out of the portfolio and put a new one in. And that's what Curtis talks about in his family office business. That's what the family office is. Once you've succeeded in building up enough financial income to operate your family forever, you just manage that income. Move some stuff out that doesn't work anymore. Move new stuff in that does. And that's pretty much what I've been doing since around 2010, after I quadrupled my income after the 2008 foreclosure market, just where I made so much money. After that, I had more money than I ever thought I'd need, and I just kept building my wealth slowly but surely. So for the rest of you out there, remember this, though. It's not just money. It's a lifestyle. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.